ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
The modern world is full of all kinds of gadgets, tools to help make life easier. But what's surprising to us today will be taken for granted in the future. So what do we take for granted now that once caused a stir? Welcome to Extraordinary Everyday, where we take the objects you may barely notice and trace their surprising and often delightful design evolution.
Putting on the top hat, tying up my white tie.
If you stop and think about today's item, it's honestly one of fashion's strangest inventions. We loop it around our necks, we pull it into a neat little noose, and call it an accessory. Yet the humble men's tie, this decorative strip of fabric, has survived centuries of reinvention. And somehow, it has come to symbolise masculinity more strongly than almost anything else you can wear. Melissa Balanta, Associate Professor at the Australian Catholic University and expert in the histories of masculinity, dress and fashion, is here to join me. Melissa, welcome.
Thanks, Anthony.
Let's start back at the beginning. Is there an earliest recorded necktie? And is that the kind of history we can trace to the kind of necktie we see today?
Yeah, well, the answer's sort of really to that. So I think what we would now recognise as the modern necktie being a quite thin piece of cloth that's tied around, you know, knotted at the throat. Basically, the four-in-hand necktie that was worn in the 1850s in Britain is probably the first point in which you'd say that's where we see it being worn. So it was potentially taken up in the first instance by posh gentlemen in a now defunct four-in-hand club in the 1850s. But it was sort of young sporting men wore this then. So it was associated, it's said to be, there's a lot of the kind of urban mythology that kind of surrounds it, but that the four-in-hand was a particular tie that coachmen would make with their whips or something, you know, right. Or their reins, the reins. You know, but it just has that sense of kind of a bit horsey, a bit racy, and that was the style that was taken up. And so increasingly after that, it certainly wasn't that everybody started wearing four-in-hand ties, but that style of neckwear became increasingly common across Western menswear styles from then. But it's not actually until 1926, so this is where you can be a little bit more precise, that a New York tailor realised that there was a better way to make the tie. So the four-in-hand tie was just a long rectangular strip of cloth and with squared off ends. And it was actually quite hard to tie and keep in place. So increasingly in the early 1900s, people would fix it with pins and clips, partly because that's fashionable, but it kept it in place. And so Jesse Lungstrom, I think he's called, the New York tailor, went, hang on a minute, I think that if we cut this on the diagonal and sew it into kind of three strips, it's going to be easier. It won't twist off from the knot. So actually from that period of time is when the ties we wear it today has been around. But a longer history places, you know, menswear history buffs will tell you that the fashion of wearing something tied around the neck for men emerged in Western menswear actually way back in the 17th century during the 30 Years' War. So apparently there were Croatian mercenaries that were fighting for the French against the Habsburgs during the war, and they wore quite dashing red cloth around their neck.
Right.
Tied around their neck and knotted at the throat. Perhaps because it was extra protection against neck thrusts or because it was fashionable at the time. In any event, French military officers were quite taken by this. They wore stiff lace collars at the time and so brought it back from Austria where they'd seen it for the first time.
So that was all mostly fashion rather than any practical use at that time, back in the day?
The adoption of it by the French was certainly in terms of fashion, but there's evidently a longer history of its use in Croatia before then. But Louis XIV takes it up, debuts it in court in and around, I think, 1646. So the cravat from that time, it was derived from Croat, and it was a reference to it, enters into French neckwear and then makes its way in other parts of Western Europe. But it's really in the from about the turn of the 19th century onwards that it becomes very fashionable. So you see a series of manuals that are published from the late 1810s through to the 1830s in England, in France, in Italy, and in Spain, which advise men about all the different kinds of, you know, knots that they can do for their cravats.
And there was never any practical real use for it, like a kind of an elaborate scarf, for example. It was always a sort of a symbol, a status symbol, it sounds like.
Yes, I mean, there's obviously different forms of neckcloths that are worn by men. So there's another history, obviously, which is about working class men wearing handkerchiefs tied around their neck that are going to, or its military origins potentially for the Croatians as well. There's actually even a suggestion that the terracotta warriors from the Qin dynasty in sort of 200 BCE are wearing neckcloths around their neck. And there's evidently practical reasons to some degree for that. It absorbs sweat or, you know, as I said, that potentially the Croatian cravat was a protection against neck thrusts. Mm. Scarves provide you with warmth if it's cold, you know. So there's that kind of practicality for particular forms of neckwear. But I think the necktie as we know it, particularly when it arrives, you know, from the 1850s onwards, it doesn't have a practical reason. It's sort of the appendix of menswear.
Right.
And so it very much, the sense of propriety or what it symbolises or of fashion become, you know, both that those are more particular drivers of its evolution.
And it's always been a form of men's clothing. Is that right?
Yes. Yes. So, I mean, it's interesting from the, if you see photographs of women across Western contexts or certainly Anglophone contexts from the 1850s, 1860s, some are wearing ribbon ties around their neck or even bow ties. And I think there's even that the term neckcloth or cravat is sometimes used to describe those. But they're not mandatory for women, that people are also wearing brooches, they're wearing lace collars, they're wearing, you know, so that sense of it's not associated specifically with women's wear. And then increasingly it becomes codified, I guess, as menswear in that way. Although, you know, there's other uses of it by women over time.
And it's always had this association with formality, but also professionalism. Of course, when we think of attire today, we think of a business attire. Has it always had that kind of association or was that a later thing?
Well, I mean, definitely neckcloths more broadly, they have that sense of it, the flouncy variations of it. So those have various different meanings to do with fashion. But the neckcloth that we're talking about from that sort of thin, it's interesting that its uptake does take place at the same time as the spread of middle-class work, of white-collar work. And so it is very much that moment in which its spread needs to be understood, I think. So I think you're right that professionalism is a major driver. It's really interesting. There's a philosopher, Richard Boothby, who offers a kind of Freudian explanation for why this happens at this time.
Now I'm nervous.
So he says, I guess it's obvious, but that neckcloths are phallic icons. That's, you know, it's an appendage that dangles down from your neck. But it's not just a sign of, you know, of a phallic icon. It's knotted or it's tied, you know. And so he's saying the message that it's telling when people are putting it on is, I'm a virile man, but I'm choosing not to express that aspect of myself now. I'm bowing to the demands of efficiency or of culture. And I think that's really persuasive.
Yes,
that really works.
Yeah, okay, it works, yeah.
Yeah, and it's also, he says, why taking off the necktie, loosening the necktie is so charged, you know, so that's either it's kind of a sexy act or it's a way of like I'm tossing off the kind of demands of my job. And interestingly too, you know, there was an event in the New Zealand Parliament in 2022 when the Maori MP Rauiri Watiti refused to wear a necktie, and it was a, you know, an expectation. And he said, I see this as a colonial noose. You know, so that there's other kind of, it symbolises culture and a sort of discipline and its demands in that way as well.
So in that same sense of symbolising a culture, what about our own particularly Australian history of the necktie? Is there one?
Yes. Yes, well, there definitely is. I mean, there's obviously, we all know people who've worn ties and we've seen them over time. But I think there are two kind of driving factors that are distinctive about an Australian approach to neckties. So the first is we don't have a history of dandyism in the same way. dandyism as I'm using it there, which is associated actually with the fashionability of cravats in the early 19th century Britain, I would use that term to refer to an obsession with impeccability, or a sort of elevation of an aesthetic of impeccability. So it's not necessarily flamboyant. In fact, that wasn't when it first emerged, but it's very much that sense of knowing and potentially playing with protocols around clothing, but perfecting them and using them with a particular sort of panache. And there isn't that tradition in Australian menswear. I think partly there wasn't a critical mass of people with manservants, you know, in the colonial period after invasion that would facilitate that, because the early forms of cravats in particular that the dandies, you know, Beau Brummel famously used to take hours with the manservant kind of fussing over his neckcloth to get it just right. And there wasn't also a critical mass of manservants that had the kinds of skills or the, you know, knowledge that would have even facilitated that kind of immaculate dressing in that same way. So it's not to say that there wasn't any, but that it didn't take on in that same way. And I think increasingly over time, an attraction to the idea of, well, hegemonic masculinity for men in Australia is about dressing down, about, you know, that's a fashion statement in itself, but it's not attracted to that kind of impeccable dressing. And that affects how you approach the necktie, you know, that it's history, I think.
Yeah.
But I think the other thing that's interesting is that there is a history in Australia of what I would call of Larry dressing. So I've been interested, the sort of early forms of youth gangs and larrikins wore Larry style in the 1870s. Ned Kelly or the kind of flash mob were very much in this tradition. And it was a lot about neckerchiefs, either worn at the neck or at the waist, because for working class men or for rural men who have hardly any money, that's a key way that you can kind of put on style effectively. Mm-hmm. So there is an interesting playing with neckwear in that way that's not about the necktie, I think.
So with all of that being said, the future of the men's necktie, where to from here? I mean, is it just a kind of an endless parade of slightly wider, slightly smaller, slightly wider, slightly thinner?
Well, I think that will definitely happen. There's definitely seasons, isn't there, in terms of the width of the tie or otherwise. I mean, something that's really interesting now is that there's definitely an upsurge that many people have noticed of women wearing neckties. Mm-hmm. Although that's interesting too, that I heard a fashion historian, Maurice Chalaron, talking about the fact that ties for women become more attractive at times when their rights are being questioned, because it is, in some ways, you could say wearing tie is saying I can beat men at their own game, or, you know, that take me seriously because I'm putting on this kind of masculine garb. So that's interesting about the moment now. And there'll definitely be women, genderqueer people, and men for whom ties are a kind of just another sartorial form to play with if you're interested in fashion. But it's also part of the language of menswear. And so I don't think that you could remove that without some forms of incoherence. So I think it will persist in various ways for that reason.
So not a noose around our neck, but rather an enduring symbol that has a great future.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Lisa, thank you so much
Thanks,
for talking
Anthony.
To us. That's a great history. Love it.
Thank you. Bye.
Melissa Belanta, Associate Professor at the Australian Catholic University and expert in the histories of dress and fashion. And I love getting your ideas for Extraordinary every day. Rena sent in an email asking us to look into Velcro. Well, we're stuck on that idea, Rena. Thank you for the suggestion. If you have an idea for us, email us at bydesign@abc.net.au. As always, if you enjoyed the episode, make sure you follow the show on ABC Listen. Just search Anthony Burke's By Design.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.